Time to take a look at home renovation, repair, water inspection issues with our two guests. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. Ken specializes in residential renovation projects. John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg consults for historic restoration projects, water and mold litigation. He's a Wisconsin registered home inspector as well. And these guys come by every so often to talk with us about your home. So if you have a renovation question or repair or water issue, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email at talk@wpr.org. Ken, good to have you back.
That's nice to be here.
And John, great to see you again as well.
Glad to be here, Larry.
You guys busy, or are you...
Well, I thought I was going to be busy shoveling snow this morning, but yeah, doing pretty well. Business is picking up for everybody. And it looks like it's going to be a pretty good construction season. A lot of work to do, a lot of repairs and...
Yeah, good. And some good renovations. All right. Mm-hmm. And John, you're busy too.
We are. A lot of design work.
Lots of design work. Well, I tell you what. I know you guys know about roof vents. And Joanne in Milwaukee, I think, has a question about roof vents. So let's go right there. Hi, Joanne. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. And thanks for taking my call. The little roof vents in our roof, the ventilation vents, they leak. And they leak when the wind blows the rain or the snow from the direction they're on. And our ceiling roof in the attic isn't finished, but that means that the floor is wet often.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody says, well, that's normal. And to me, that can't be normal, because if somebody had a finished attic, that insulation and drywall and everything would be wet.
Now, Joanne, you're talking about the little, we call them turtle vents or pot
right.
vents, little metal ones.
Right.
And there's two ways that they can leak. First, about half of them are installed incorrectly. Yes, and you can actually go to the manufacturers and download the installation instructions. So sometimes it leaks around them, but more frequently it is indeed snow blowing into them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wherever possible, we suggest to people that they put in continuous ridge venting rather than these pot vents.
Mm.
And maybe that's not easy for you to do if your roof is only a few years old,
mm-hmm.
or maybe you can live with this for 4 or 5 years till you put in a new roof. But a lot of work has gone into ridge vents to make sure that snow won't go into them.
Yeah.
In fact, GAF makes one called Snow Country that is especially guaranteed not to let snow in. If you go to GAF's website, you can read all about it. So you do have... What you've got there is something that's sort of low-tech and not terribly well thought out. They work, but they are a little bit problematical. There are better products out there, but unfortunately, the secret most likely is to replace them with something better.
What would be – and the ridge vent is something better.
The continuous ridge vent, yes, is better.
Mm.
We don't have the blow-in problems. The other nice thing that you have is that your attic is vented based upon convection. So the warmer the air is, which is the highest point in the attic, the more likely you are to get really good convection. So let's vent out the hot air where it's the hottest, not partway up the the attic roof.
Wow. Makes sense.
Okay, well, I think we'll have wet spots for a while because
okay.
it's a new roof, and
yeah,
we're not ready to...
To spend the money.
Something like that. Yeah.
Well, you could look, though, as John was saying, you could look at how those were installed, and if they were installed incorrectly, you could probably at least, could you replace those, John?
Well, you could, if they are installed incorrectly and it's been less than 6 years, Joanne would just call the roofer and say, look, buddy, here's the printout from the manufacturer. I'd like you to go up there and do it right this time. And I'm sure he would say, gee, Joanne, you're smarter than I am. Thanks for informing me. I'll take care of that right away.
I'd have to catch him first.
There you go, Joanne.
Not been too forthcoming. Okay, great.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. On to James in Madison now. Hi, James.
I have an outside porch under a second story floor of a residence. The outside porch has a plywood city ceiling that I will take down so I can insulate between the joists to make the second story floor warmer. what should I put between these 2x10 wood joists for insulation of the floor above?
Well, James, probably the best thing that you can do is use like a two-part polyurethane foam blown in. That would be the best thing the best bang for your buck, basically. Are you going to do the work yourself or are you going to hire this out?
Well, I'm hiring it out.
Okay, then that'd be the ticket. They'll give you enough R value.
But
go ahead.
I need to tell the man what to do. He's not a specialist in insulation.
Well, what you could do is you could contract with the carpenter to take off the plywood and to reinstall it, and then contract with an insulator separately that can do the blown insulation. And many of the local insulators can help you out. There's probably a dozen companies in Madison that can do that for you now.
Okay.
So what I would do is have the carpenter do the carpentry work, and hire out the insulator separately, unless you have a carpenter that knows how to subcontract to hire the proper insulation contractor.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Robert in Madison, your turn. Hi, Robert.
Hello. You guys are just in time in regards to some questions I need to have answered. I just had somebody come in for an estimate of taking or repairing my chimney or taking it out entirely. The taking out entirely was quite unexpected. I was really interested in having it tuck pointed, but because of some issues that I had with the chimney, I thought taking it out might be a good idea. My furnace is vented out the side of the house now, but my hot water heater is vented up that chimney.
Yeah.
What I need to know is what my best options are.
How old is your hot water heater?
The hot water heater is, it was installed in 9/11, you know, around that time where the World Trade Center was.
Okay, so right around 2001.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you wanted to replace it with a high-efficiency side vent water heater or a tankless water heater that's side venting, then you could take down your chimney. Otherwise, you'd probably want to reline your chimney if it hasn't been relined, because what happens is the unburnt gases from the exhaust tends to eat the mortar between the bricks, and it'll destroy your chimney from the inside out.
By the time you put a liner in, are you starting to get to the cost of a new...
You could be. So it'd be something to look at. An aluminum liner. I don't think they're more than $300-$400. So
okay.
I have an aluminum liner in there. It was, you know, like folded up, and they had it go to the. That was installed.
Okay. That's good.
And let's see, when was that installed? I think it was installed with the hot water heater, knowing that was the only thing going up the chimney at the time.
Okay.
The damage done was previous to that, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
And is there any reason for me to hold on to that thing? You know, is it just aesthetics or?
Well, aesthetics, Robert, are probably the only reason. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have a very historic house where the chimney is important. But if this is a little 2-foot by 2-foot chimney, I don't think anyone's ever going to miss it. And there are a lot of reasons to get rid of a chimney, especially if it's an older house.
1939.
Okay, 1939, yeah. There's probably a 1-inch or a 2-inch air gap all the way around that chimney from the basement into the attic. So it's sort of like having a window open.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get rid of that chimney, you can then seal the seal and insulate wherever that chimney currently penetrates the thermal envelope. So you're going to be looking at reducing your utility bills with a new water heater. You can get the tax credit on the new water heater. You're going to reduce your utility bills by not having the air loss up the chimney. So I think it's going to be a really good investment to simply get rid of that chimney.
So when they take out that chimney, they should try to get in to where they can seal it off, because before that,
right.
I couldn't seal it off.
Right. You want to get it down not just into the attic, but below the attic floor so you can completely seal it. Otherwise, you still have that air gap. And
yep.
The other thing that you have is you have that fire gap. If there's ever a fire in your basement, that can go right up through that chimney chase into the attic if it's one of these old ones with 2 inches all the way around the chimney.
Now, let me get this straight. It goes, my chimney goes from the top of the roof. It actually is about 5 feet high off, you know, where it's at the roof level. Mm-hmm. Then it goes through a vented area, which is, this is a Cape Cod.
Yes,
so
uh-huh.
There's that half, you know, that semi-done attic, but I can't get in there, and it's sort of like dead space in there that has been insulated. Mm-hmm. But that's also where the chimney goes through that floor and probably isn't sealed. So that
right.
should come out.
That is correct. You should at least get down into that floor, and you may as well just take the whole thing out. That's
the whole
all.
Chimney out all the way to the basement?
Yes, that is often. It is surprisingly inexpensive to have a crew come in and take those out.
Yeah, once you get below the ceiling line of the house, you can usually just drop pieces down into the bottom of the chimney and take it out from the bottom out.
Right.
The hard part is doing the roof and the attics. And that's the part you have to do.
Boy, that's oh, gosh, that's a lot of dust, isn't it, inside the house, if I have to do it inside the house?
You know, a contractor that knows how to protect your house from dust can do that with, and it will be surprisingly clean. The basement area where it's, where you're carrying it out might be a little dirty, but contractors can put up temporary zip walls, we call them. They're plastic walls, clean up after themselves. And it's not very dirty. It really
okay,
isn't.
Let me just get this straight. The bottom line is take the whole thing down to the bottom, get a new hot water heater that vents out the side.
Yes,
yep. That is correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a
Robert.
Lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Josh in Duluth, Minnesota, we are on to you. Hi, Josh.
Hi, guys. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. I am looking at doing some in-floor heating. This is going to be in a kitchen on the main floor, and where my small dilemma comes in is that this is an old house, almost 100 years old now, and it has an added on back porch, like a small pantry and like a mud room,
mm-hmm.
and that is very poorly insulated, to say the least, and I find the floor at that end of the kitchen is very cold to the touch, as opposed to, you know, the more interior side of the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And if I, one concern that I have with in-floor heating, you know, with the more conventional, the wire that you run in there and then you put your mortar, your mud over and put your tile down, is that I'm going to have a substantially higher draw on that wire at one end of the kitchen than the other. And I would hate for an element to burn out or a wire to burn out once the floor is completely finished. I've looked at another product that's like an electroplastic product that self-regulates so that we have much less chance of that. Of course, that's a Cadillac, and it's more expensive than I can afford.
Well, Josh,
the third option is insulating underneath it and then putting down the heated floor.
Well, and that's the option you should choose because when you have a heated floor and you don't have it well insulated underneath, as much heat is going to escape down as is going to go up. So
mm-hmm.
Putting the electric floor in will feel a little more comfortable, but you'll be wasting a phenomenal amount of energy. So if you can insulate under the floor, put your electric floor heating, radiant floor heating in, and then what are you going to tile over the top of it? Is that what
you're thinking? Yeah, just ceramic tile, probably.
That will work great. That will work just fine. Insulate the entire floor, not just the area that's out. That's the old porch, because,
sure.
like I say, you're just wasting energy if you're heating up the floor cavities.
And are you suggesting to insulate it from the basement?
I don't.
Or underneath, you know, like on over the subfloor, you know.
No.
And
I wouldn't go over the subfloor. I can't tell you because we haven't seen your porch. If we saw an elevation, we could give you a pretty good idea. Typically, my experience with these kinds of add-ons are that the porch floor was just leveled off when it was turned into the kitchen, and you've got space underneath. Can you get to it from underneath? And if you can, what you want to do is insulate it from the underside, cover that up so that it's protected from from insects and critters if it's outside.
It is outside. And actually fairly large crawl space. A guy can crawl sit down in there.
And this is a good time to do it before the spiders come into full bloom,
Yeah. The one, considering it's such an old house, I think one of the main problems is that the floor joists are, there's no rim joist down there. The floor joists are cemented into the foundation.
Oh,
and the foundation is basically right underneath the subfloor. Yeah. So, as in Duluth, most of the houses are on a hillside. I have probably 4 feet of exposed foundation out in my back there by that porch. Well, and my feeling is that basically that's a heat sink. It's just sucking the heat out, from the floor because the concrete is directly underneath it, and I'm constantly losing heat like that.
Well, that's
have you ever heard of a product? It was called a Weddy board, WEDI. That is some kind of, it's a combination of polystyrene and cement board that is meant to go as an underlayment under your tile and your wire, and as opposed to from underneath the basement. Have you ever heard of
it? Is it an insulating material?
Yeah, but I talked to some folks at the local big box store, and they brought up the fact that any sort of polystyrene you put is going to be compacted over time.
Well, with
high traffic.
Well, how much insulation thickness can you get above the floor?
That would, I think it comes in a quarter inch, maybe 3/8.
So that's not going to give you. That's just going to be wishful thinking. It's you need to insulate it, and that means some mass. And if you use a foam insulation, you're going to need 4 or 5 inches minimally. And if you use fiberglass or which I don't recommend, or dense pack cellulose, you're going to need probably 7-8 inches at least to insulate that floor. Another thing you could do, here's a couple things you might consider. You're in Duluth, correct, Josh?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A couple things you might consider. Call a couple of contractors that do a lot of remodeling in your area. Call a couple of insulators that do a lot of retrofitting in your area and see what they say. They'll be happy to give you a free estimate. Or at least a free consultation, get you in the ballpark of what's the best route for you, the best bang for your buck, and then make a decision. Well, I would say that you definitely want to insulate the floor, and you may even want to seal around the foundation of the porch, but you have to be careful how you do that because you have to vent that either into the existing basement or keep it cold, and that's something that we really can't get into right here.
Yeah, well, good luck to you, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When you phone in at 1-800-642-1234, you will be greeted by Jim Packard, our producer for today, who always does a great job. Thanks, Jim. Ken Adams, John Freiberger, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller, and we'll take some more calls from Pat in Milwaukee next. Pat, hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am having a very serious problem with ice damming on my roof. Luckily, spring is coming and I don't have to shovel it off for a while. But it's occurring all the way around the house. I have a 4-bedroom ranch. The roof pitch is about a 6/12. I just had it re-insulated probably about, I think it's 5 or 6 years ago now, and I did call someone who claimed to be an ice damming expert, and the problem is not gone. I'm having to take an 8-foot ladder and move it all the way around the house to shovel up 3 feet every time it snows, and I really would like to put an end to that.
All right. Well, John, what do you think?
Well, we need 2 things to stop ice dams. We need not only insulation to stop the heat loss from the house, that's warming the attic and melting the snow, but we also need good attic venting to clear out whatever heat comes through. Now, did you have soffit vents and ridge vents installed when they did the insulation work?
When they did the insulation work, I believe they put in those white foam mm-hmm. things in the attic.
The insulation dams.
Yes.
But are there holes in the soffit so air can get into those insulation dams?
I do have some holes, and when I had the roof redone, they added a few, but I would not call it a continuous venting in the overhang.
I'm going to send you to a website, Pat. And this is a great website because it has worksheets and cross-sectional drawings, and it's going to have a picture of your house and how it needs to be vented, and you can measure the square footage and put it in the worksheet and really educate yourself.
Okay.
And it's called coravent.com, and it's spelled C-O-R and then a dash, the letter A, another dash, V-E-N-T.com. Very consumer-friendly. I mean, they sell things. They sell venting stuff, and both Ken and I order things from them.
Okay.
And but all of you probably don't need to order anything from them, but it sounds like you do need to take a look at their work pages to see whether you have enough venting or not. Now, let's say you've got a 1950s, 1960s ranch house, and you've got six what look like heating grills cut into your soffit, spaced 4 feet apart. Well, that means a lot of your rafter or truss spaces have no cold air coming into them at all. So even though you have the chutes or insulation dams continuous in the attic, unless you have the continuous soffit vent, you may not be getting enough air up there.
Okay. Now, so, I'm going to have the trim wrapped. When he does that, could I have him cut a slot in the overhang?
Indeed, you could.
And give me a continuous venting?
That's right. And sometimes what people do if they've got the old plywood overhangs is they simply take them down and put in a modern metal, vinyl, or cement board overhang that has the venting in it.
Okay. Now, what do I do in the areas where there's no overhang? It's when the home was built, I requested a utility room. And they did not tell me at that time that in order to get the utility room that they were going to give me a knockout.
Oh, so they sort of bumped it out or they cantilevered it out so
that's
right under.
And that's one of my major areas that's a problem.
That's where you hold on to that 8-foot ladder.
Yeah.
Tell me that. I'm 63 years old. I'm getting too tired of climbing that ladder every winter.
Probably the only thing you can do there is when we've had the situation, we actually use the two-part urethane foam insulation that Ken and I always bring up. And we actually shape it into the attic so that if the roof does leak, the water comes on top of the insulation and we drain it to the outside. But the insulation will reduce the heat loss, which will reduce the melting. And because it is because it's vapor and waterproof, you can also use it as a shield. You're going to need a pretty smart insulation contractor to do that. But a lot of the guys who do the two-part foam insulation are pretty well educated nowadays.
And there's plenty of good people in Milwaukee, too.
Right.
Yeah.
A two-part foam insulation.
Yep.
Now,
right.
We did put, when we did the roof, we used that rubber along the edges.
The ice and water shield, yes.
The ice and water shield, and we went up actually two
courses, which would be a little over under 6 feet.
Right. So I'm not getting any leakage on the inside.
You're just getting the big ice dams, and it's and of course they can tear the gutters off the house and do other nasty things. So you're right. Even though you're not getting any leakage, to go ahead and try to improve the venting. Remember, Pat, if you improve the venting, that's also going to keep your attic temperature down in the summer, and that's going to reduce your air conditioning bill as well because the ceilings won't be as hot.
Yep. Makes good sense. Good luck to you, Pat. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And more callers online. Let's go to Dave and Marinette next. Dave, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
My problem is I got venting skylights in a family room.
Okay.
And I have one of the skylights, you know, they're the wood frame skylights. They were the top of the line when I put them in years ago. It's bulging out. It looks like one of the springs or one of the rods inside the frame is bulging the wood out in one spot. And I really don't have to open that one or anything. Could I just take and jack that back in and brace it in?
Is this a Velux?
It's an Anderson skylight. It's a venting opening skylight.
So the skylight itself opens up or it has a vent?
Yeah, the whole window, the whole thing opens.
And what you're trying to do is just seal it up so it doesn't open anymore?
No. On the side of the take-and-draw window, there's rods or springs that go through there when you open the latch or close the latch to unlock the window.
Yep. I think John knows more about Anderson.
One of the springs are bulging out of the wood side.
That spring may be broken or disconnected.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you should be able to get those parts from Anderson. And what you may want to do is simply fix it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was just wondering. I didn't know how I want to start tearing apart.
Yeah, some disassembly required.
Now we got 5 feet of snow like today or whatever.
Anderson's a good Midwestern company, and if you call up there and talk to one of their tech support people, they'll probably send you a cut sheet as to how that thing is put together and a parts list. You can order the parts from them. And if you can't do it yourself, call one of the local window people in town, the local glass company, and have them come and do it. But it sounds like the easiest thing here to do is actually just replace what is probably a broken part. It's also possible that the pivot pin has come loose where the arm and the spring are attached, and the spring has pulled the arm against the wood. So we don't know which part it is that is wrong until you do a little bit of disassembly. But my guess is if you call Anderson, they're going to say, oh, yeah, I've answered this question 63 times. Here's the most likely thing. So give them a ring.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. James in Winchester, on to you now. Hi, James.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding bats. My home is about 10 years old, and twice now I've had bats in my attic. I called out a firm to get rid of them, and the first time it was quite successful, lasted for about 4 years. But now this time when they came back, he said that the ridge venting was pulling away from the roof itself, and the bats were climbing in underneath this.
Yep.
He said there was another type of ridge venting that could be installed that was a better quality than what I have. I was wondering if there's any validity to this. Right now, currently, he just screwed it down and sealed the screws. So yeah. I'm just wondering, should I have the better roof venting put on, or wait and see what happens, or what would you recommend?
James, you've got a metal ridge vent, don't you?
It appears to be plastic from what I can
see. Plastic, yeah. That's the newer version. Yeah, they tend not to seal very well. You'd probably be better off using something. John mentioned earlier a CoraVent. There are a couple of different types, but one of them looks like really thick plastic steel wool, and you lay it on the ridge, and then you nail your ridge shingles over the top of it.
Okay.
And bats, if they install them correctly, bats cannot get in or out, unfortunately. So you want to make sure that they're not in there when you seal them in.
Right. Well, now they did put an extruder on. Both times that they came out, they put extruders on so that bats could find their way out.
But not get back in.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and that's what you might want to make sure that you have for at least a while and make sure that they're gone.
Okay.
But CoraVent, John mentioned the website. It's CoraVent.
And GAF has an almost daunting number of different types of ridge vents.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I would just go to GAF and click into ridge vent, and you'll probably find 8 or 10 different choices there, but there's really differences in quality in venting. So,
Will you do the work yourself?
No, I'd have the contractor do it. He recommended that he come back out and change them, not immediately because, as I said, he just did re-anchor them with screws and then seal the screws. He said it'll be good for a while, but eventually he said it will pull away again and I'll have the bat issue.
Well, have him bring a sample out of what he wants to put up, and in the meantime, go to the websites and look it up, and so you'll have a little bit of background.
Yeah. Great.
All right, good
Thanks.
Luck.
Yeah, we were just talking about bats. So, yesterday on the program, somebody phoned in, and bats can get into a very small opening. Like
3/8 of an inch.
Size of a dime.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Size of a dime. And so you got to have it pretty tight if you're going to keep them out. And that was great advice. And James, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Jeff in Vermont Township, your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, gentlemen. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, we live in a stone house, 1850-built stone house. Actually, John has been in the house because he did our house inspection. thank you again. We have this sort of weird mold, though, that shows up. There's a new construction piece of the house, but it shows up on windows in both the stone house part and the new construction part. And it's this dark brown with a reddish tinge. And I'm looking at it in the new construction part. And this is on double-hung Pella windows that we were told were installed in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't figure out where the moisture is coming from. and where the mold's coming from. And right now I'm facing southeast, and I see a window on the south side and a window on the east side that both have mold on the bottom part of the top window of the double-hung windows. Any thoughts?
Well, what you have is either an algae or a fungal growth. If it's reddish, it's entirely possible that it's actually a type of airborne algae of all strange things. So I think what you're going to have to look at is you're going to have to try to figure out what the moisture source is as to exactly why it's wet. Good source for that is University of Minnesota Cold Climate Housing Information Center.
Okay.
So University of Minnesota Cold Climate Housing Information Center. Look for the Angel and Olson article on moisture source by type. And that will give you sort of a checklist to go through as to, okay, why is the house wet? Now, a stone house can be difficult because stone house, stone foundation, you have continuous moisture movement through the walls. And what you may find is that you're going to have to put in whole house dehumidification to get the humidity down below 40%. Ideally, you want to even be down below 40, down to around 35% inside the house. You should probably get a humidistat, Jeff, and just sort of see what the moisture is inside the house.
Moist.
Okay. Well, then something needs to be done. Whole house dehumidification is one way of looking at it. A good system, probably around $2,500 to $2,700 with a Sahara. There are some rebates on it. The other thing to look at is a heat recovery vent system, though that, of course, is probably going to work better in the winter than in the summer. But certainly if you're running 45, 50, 55%, even with a good quality window, once that window gets down to 35, 36 degrees at 50% humidity, you're going to get water on it.
Right.
So first try to identify the moisture source, reduce the sources if you can, but the stone basement, that can be difficult, and you may have to simply go to whole house dehumidification.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. We have an email from Denise who says, we're planning to add a covered porch and deck to our remodeled farmhouse using the composite deck boards and treated lumber. We'd like to use cedar posts. However, to support the metal porch roof and cedar... we would like to use cedar posts to support the metal porch roof and the cedar railings. Will the underground section of the cedar post last without being treated with something like tar? What would you suggest?
I wouldn't use cedar below grade. And the only cedar that you might want to consider is called Alaskan yellow cedar, but even that doesn't have the staying power. Your best bet would be to go with treated lumber under the ground. 60 pounds pressure. It's rated for below grade, basically,
right?
And then change the cedar to cedar above the grade. You could make the transition in the floor joists, so that shouldn't be an issue. You have to consider twist and that sort of thing. You'll want to have a good plan drawn up so that it's adequately structured.
Well, the other thing would be you're going to have a footing underneath this.
Yep.
And you may, in that case, just want to auger in and put in sonotubes and just bring the sonotubes 6 inches above grade.
And then use
the little steel transition pieces. And then you would have your cedar starting from there. There's a couple structural advantages to that because you don't have the hinge effect of the post sitting on the post. So a couple different ways of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Stuart DeGay in Partyville next. Hi, thank you for calling.
How are you folks doing?
Just great.
Great. I have an older home built in 1972, and between the basement and the first floor, we have newspaper that has been treated, and over that, something called buffalo board, and over that, a porous ceiling tile. However, I would like to replace that with something fireproof, and they suggested something called rock salt insulation, but I have not been able to find a builder or a construction company that knows what I'm even talking about. Are you familiar with it?
I'm sorry. I've never heard of. Did you say rock salt insulation?
Yeah, they call it rock salt insulation. I saw it on a building show on television one time, on a home improvement show.
You've stumped me. I've heard of rock wool. Rock wool insulation
is
an older.
Maybe it's a brand name. I don't know.
Well, could be. Well, John, you're the insulating expert. What I'm passing this buck off here.
Well, once again, they've stumped the chumps, haven't they?
I'm
afraid we can't offer you any help here. I mean, the typical way for Silbox insulation is either friction-fit fiberglass, which, of course, doesn't burn. It's not exactly fireproof, but it doesn't burn. There are some specific fireproof insulations out there that are made for, you know, for specialized uses, and perhaps this is one of the brand names. But I think we're getting into sort of something a little more specialized and esoteric than Ken and I can manage for you.
Well, I was kind of hoping.
I can't even find it online. I'm trying to find it online, and I'm not finding it online either.
Well, Larry's got the smartest listeners in the area, so I'm sure that somebody will call up within the next 45 minutes.
Yeah, stay listening, Gabe, because somebody will call.
Somebody will tell us.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Sorry we couldn't be of help.
Ken and Rhinelander, it's your turn. Hi, Ken.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call. I have water staining on an exposed vaulted ceiling. It's 1x8 knotty pine. And it happened, of course, we got the heavy rain right at the time we had the roofing off last year or the year before. And we had all kinds of paper on it. I was up there in the rain with some family members tarping it. But we still ended up with water staining. And my question is there any way that can be bleached out or taken out, or am I faced with removing the whole ceiling and redoing it?
How bad is your stain, Ken?
Well, it's all over. There are probably a dozen or a dozen and a half places. Some of it runs from one board to the next, and some of it runs all along the tongue and groove, and some of it's black, some of it's brown. It just looks ugly.
Is it a knotty cedar, or is it a real nice finished clear cedar?
It's a knotty pine.
Knotty pine, right.
Yeah. I've tried to determine what kind of finish it has on it, and I'm actually a hobbyist woodworker, and I can't tell. If it has any finish on it at all, it can't be much more than the old shellac that would have been put on maybe back in the 60s. It's not a highly glossed finish or anything like that, but I'm really kind of at a loss as to what to do.
I'm wondering if this might have even been a tongue oil finish that's pretty much gone.
Which might be helpful, actually.
Yeah, it'd be real helpful if it would, because if it's a shellac in the 60s is pretty unlikely.
Okay.
A bad urethane. We had a lot of bad urethanes in the 60s.
Yeah. Sometimes linseed oil was another
thing. That's right. Could be linseed oil.
Yeah.
When all else fails, I get a can of old-fashioned turpentine. And I wipe it down with turpentine. The brown stains are probably some sort of tannins. It's the natural preservative that you get in the pines and the cedars. And sometimes, since the turpentine is basically a tree oil, sometimes it will dissolve it, or at least it'll smear it around evenly. If it smears it around evenly, what you might find that you can do is then try a small area with tongue oil, because the tongue oil is going to darken it, and it might even it out enough that it is unnoticeable. Or you could use an oil-type stain like a Minwax or something. Yeah, I hate to tear the whole thing out because that's a tremendous waste of wood. But start with the turpentine. There are other things that dissolve much better, like lacquer thinner, but they're just too dangerous to really try to use on.
Yeah, and it's in the living room, you know, and I'd be working 12 feet off the floor on one end and 8 feet off on the other.
We don't need you dizzy that high up.
I don't want to be that high up.
Michelangelo.
Yeah, really.
So I think the third step after the turpentine and oil treatment would be, if it still looks marginally okay, you might try a pigment and oil instead of going to a urethane or another more permanent finish, and just keep getting it darker until you see if you like it. If you can't, then all else fails, then you have to take it off. So...
A good source online on tongue oils, and somebody who you might be able to talk with because she's a really good chemist, is a company called Sutherland Wells.
Yes.
Sutherland. Ken, is there a dash in that then on the website?
W-E-L-L-E-S. I don't think so.
And this woman has come up with modern versions of the old tongue oils, tremendous products, wonderful service, and she's immensely smart. And you may want to go online and give her a call. And let's say you need a particular pigmented oil, I think that she would probably be able to make that up for you in batches to order.
Okay, because this is natural finish now. There's no stain or anything on it whatsoever. It's the natural, and it's aged. You know, because it's mid-60s when it was put up.
Right. It's got a lot of oxidation.
Yes.
And sometimes just a plain tongue oil is going to even things out and darken enough that it's going to work. Now, it's going to turn dark, but then it's going to lighten as the tongue oil, you know, works its way in.
If you're a woodworker, you might have some scraps laying around. Definitely try it on some scraps first and, you know, see if you could...
A lot of scraps.
Okay.
I really appreciate your help, and I'll give it a try.
All right, thanks, Ken.
Let us know how that works out, Ken, yeah. Because this is not an uncommon problem in northern Wisconsin. If this works, let Larry know.
Yeah, let us know. Actually, shoot us a message on my Facebook page. That would be a quick way to do it, The Larry Mueller Show. Just go to the Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show, and I'll make sure that, just add it right in. Let us know. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg's, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along here on the Ideas Net, to Larry Mueller with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. And guys, we got an email from Dan, who is an energy consultant with a focus on energy program, and he was referring back to Pat's problem, and I believe that was ice damming. And Pat's problem is most likely caused by improper air sealing at the attic floor. Increasing venting can, under these conditions, increase the ice damming by increasing the airflow from the heated portion of the house. Number one need is air sealing. Absolutely.
Great. That brings up a really good point, Larry. At least a good segue to focus on energy, which is a great place to start any kind of a remodeling project. Mm-hmm. Anytime you want to improve the insulation value of your house, the energy efficiency of your house, or add on, get an energy audit through Focus on Energy. It's very inexpensive. You get, if you make improvements, you get some tax credits, mm-hmm. and sometimes other energy credits from your utility companies, and it's just hard to beat the deal.
I think what Dan picked up on is Pat said that she had new venting installed in her roof, the new high venting. Mm-hmm. So if she has a new high venting that's sending air out, that air's got to come from someplace. And if she's like Robert with the old chimney in there and has other leaks coming into the attic, what can happen is that high venting can suck air out of the house. Now, putting in the correct amount of soffit venting will help with that. But he is correct that air sealing the house should be done as well. And again, on that CoreEvent site, they talk about balance of venting is something that really is required. If you have too much high venting, you can have problems. So it's pretty hard to have too much soffit venting.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Jim in Green Bay next. Jim, hello to you.
Hi there. Well, I got all kinds of questions, but I'll save them and I'll try to do it the next time they're on. my main question was, when we built, of course, you try to plan for everything, but we end up with a utility room that's more like a hallway. So the only light we get is from a bathroom and the windows offset. So in the morning, and actually most of the day, it's a dark place. And we're always turning on light switches. And I've seen advertisements for these light tubes that can be installed. And, you know, the house is going on 10 years old. So we'd end up having to have it cut into the roof we have. Does that work well? I mean, do we run into problems with sealing it up for water? Our builder didn't like to put in skylights. He was not a big fan of them, and he kept steering us away from them when he built. But
well, good quality skylights, that's kind of old school. I grew up, my father was a roofer, and he felt the same way. But good quality skylights will last the life of the roof, and Anderson Velux is a great company. But these solar tubes, they have a very good reputation. We've put several of them in, and they work very well. It's all a matter of the quality of installation. So if you've got a professional installer, knows what he's doing, follows the instructions by the manufacturer, you should be just fine.
All right. There you have it. Thank you very much for calling. And let's see, we've got Bri I in Milwaukee up next. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, this is Bridie Gatzer from Milwaukee. I had a question about, I'm doing a slate roof, 12 by 12 pitch, so it's like 45 degree angle, and I just had a question. I'm using recycled and some salvage slate, and I was seeing, would you recommend 20-ounce copper or 16-ounce copper for the flashings, valley, chimney? I was thinking about putting gutters on, and I was just I wanted to know what you would recommend.
Well, most of the time we put on 16-gauge copper. So
okay, 16.
Yeah.
And would that make a difference for the 20? Why would you recommend 16 for the weight? Or?
Well, it's nice, thick material. It's about as much as most metal brakes that are used out in the field can handle. And it's available at most suppliers.
Okay.
I think 20-gauge is it's a lot lighter. It's a little easier to have it crack in the bends. But it'll still last a long time. 20-gauge is still good stuff. But, if you're going to spend the money, it's not that much more for 16-gauge. So I'd go that route.
And what kind of solder would you recommend?
I don't know.
Would you use the 50-50 or...
You mean lead 50? Let me see.
Yeah, lead in 50 lead, 50 tin?
I can't tell you that. I don't have an answer for that. Do you have any ideas, John? Because
I don't. One of the problems
things are changing.
One of the problems is I do not know what the latest changes on lead solder. There's a lot of things you could use 5 years ago you can't use anymore. 50-50
And how would I find that information out on what to use?
I'm assuming you're having a roofing specialist do this.
I was going to do this myself.
Oh, cool. Do you have...
Then probably check with your supply house, because your supply house is going to know what they currently basically can legally sell.
And sometimes okay. If you could call up architectural metal companies, people do a lot of this sort of thing, and sometimes people love to talk about what they know about, and you could probably find somebody that can give you some very good information there, too.
Great. That sounds great. Thank you guys very much.
Good luck. I hope it's a fun project for you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. A couple of emails came in relating to the rock salt that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And one person, Scott, emailed to say maybe what they were talking about was rock sol, S-O-L, which is another name for rock wool. And there's a sol rock company that... out there, so it may be a name for rock wool. And Pete in La Crosse emailed; he thought it might be vermiculite.
It'd be pretty hard to keep vermiculite in a sill box, but yeah, certainly rock wool batting is out there and is frequently used. There actually are fewer fire problems with rock wool than with fiberglass, but it's the difference is. So minimal that it doesn't really make any difference in a house.
So she may have heard rock sol and thought rock salt.
Yeah.
It could be.
And that could well be. And let's see. We have some more. I'm got an email here from Elaine who's replacing cedar siding on a 30-year-old home where woodpeckers have made numerous holes and a family of flying squirrels have used one hole for their home. My neighbor had the same problem, replaced his cedar siding with new cedar liberally stained, and the woodpeckers immediately returned. Mm-hmm, I'm planning to cover old cedar siding with new vinyl siding. Is that a good idea?
Boy, do we know a lot about this subject. We could go on for hours.
Sorry to laugh. I know it's frustrating, but...
We have researched this and researched this. We have researched every possible squirrel repellent. We have researched... surface applications. We have researched everything. And basically, the best thing we've found is put an owl on your roof and move it once a week. So, unfortunately, if you have woodpeckers in the area, especially as mating season is coming up, they're going to drum. And once they make holes, other opportunistic things are going to move into it. You can get, I think our client, didn't our client get a permit to shoot a woodpecker finally?
That was the last resort, but that's where it went.
That was the last resort. Certainly not recommended, but woodpeckers are a tremendous problem, and Ken and I have tried every possible way of solving it, And sometimes changing the material is what you solve. Now, certainly, I think both Ken and I would agree that if you're going to put on new siding with woodpeckers and flying squirrels around, we're thinking that you're going to be better off with a cement board, a hardy plank, or mm-hmm. a CertainTeed weather boards than you are with a vinyl siding.
Yeah. So you can, but you could put that siding right over the top of the cedar.
You should be able to. The hardest part is making sure it's flashed properly at windows and soffit and fascia. That's the critical issue.
Okay, but otherwise you can do it.
Yeah.
All right. We have Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg with us today to talk home renovation and repair. Glad to have them with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Net. Home renovation, repair, water inspection issues on our minds today with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. Lots of callers online, so I think we're going to go right to the telephones and talk with Ken first from Eagle River. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I have a question. We have a cabin in northern Wisconsin that was built on a crawl space many years ago. It was uninsulated. Last year, we had isonine insulation applied to the rim joist and the sidewalls, the inside of the crawl space. We did not do the floor of the crawl space up into the joists, partially because there's plumbing in the crawl space. It's all PEX plumbing, and I was concerned about if it was too well insulated and that the PEX there and any drains were below that we could have a freezing problem.
Mm-hmm.
We did find that the place did seem stay somewhat warmer with the just doing the walls and the rim joist, but I'm wondering about whether it would be a good idea to have the floor done also.
Because you have plumbing under the floor, it probably doesn't make sense for you to do the floor insulation if you've got the perimeter insulation done correctly. Do you have any heat source down there?
There is one. The heat ducts also run. There's one main trunk heat duct that runs from a furnace, which is in a separate area, into that area,
mm-hmm.
and then and we did have the heat, but there is one
little
vent that opens mm-hmm. up down in there.
Okay.
But the rest of it, we did have them put isonine on those trunks to help keep them, keep the heat coming up into the cabin.
Yeah, and that's fine. I would not insulate the floor. You don't want to create a cold spot for your plumbing. I think you were right to do it the way you did.
Okay.
You got the walls insulated all the way up into the ring joist and all the way down to the footing.
Okay. What about putting a vapor barrier on the dirt floor in there?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Oh, you don't have anything there now?
No, it's just it's near a lake, it's sand, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a real moisture problem down there, but I dread going down there and doing it. But
yeah.
Well, what you need is a 16-year-old boy.
Some little guy to go down there and do it.
But, yeah, I would just get some 6 or 8 mil plastic and put it down on the floor. You could take a couple of buckets full of sand and put it over the top, make sure it's nicely sealed around the perimeter. You want to keep that space dry. It might not seem like you'll get ground moisture up there, but you want to seal it up.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. All right, thanks a lot for calling.
Bye-bye.
And Christine in Wauwatosa, on to you. Hi, Christine.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a rear upper deck that's about 8x18, and it has it's copper. It's on a 73-year-old home. And I've got leak problems that only occur during the winter freeze-thaw cycles. And so I've always got to go up, make sure it's snow-free. But meanwhile, it's got to be addressed. There's damage to the interior plaster. And I guess my question is, can it be resoldered? Is there a way of keeping the copper deck? And if not, what would be a good thing to replace it in order to have traffic up there?
Oh, traffic. All right, so it's a walkable deck. Are you
sure
this is
copper? Yeah,
there's
a door off of it, and I'd like to be able to use it.
I'm wondering if this is actually a tin with lead joint deck. A copper deck would be pretty unusual, unless it's bright, the green copper color.
Yeah, it's green.
It is green. Okay, well, perhaps it is indeed copper sheets. Yeah. The fallback at this point for replacing those decks is to use an EPDM rubber roofing. And in many cases, that can actually be applied over the deck. But in case there's any decay underneath, if this is really quite old, I think I would take it off. They'll put down new underlayment and then put the EPDM decking over it. And then you need to have a surface that you can walk on.
Okay, so what do you put on top of that?
Well, it depends upon your railing heights, but one of the things that Ken and I like is a play guard. The company used to be called Dodge Rugapole, but now they've given themselves some eco-friendly name. Do you remember what it is now, Ken?
No, but if you go on, if you just Google PlayGuard, it will come up now.
PlayGuard is it's recycled matting, and it comes in all different heights and thicknesses. It was developed for playgrounds where when the kids took a nosedive off the slide, they wouldn't get injured. What's nice about it is a clip-together system, so if you ever need to clean that roof, you can just pick it up, stack it up, put it back down again. And it's an eco-friendly product, and I've been specifying on projects, and Ken has been installing it for some years on his projects, I know.
Yeah, and it doesn't. It has very low friction against the rubber roof, so it won't wear the rubber roof out.
Oh, okay.
So. Yeah, and that copper.
Yeah.
I'd be tempted to, if you're going to take that copper.
Recycle.
That was my next question.
Yeah, because that copper is worth some money.
Yeah, you might make money on this job, Christine.
Yeah, that copper is worth a lot of money.
Is it worth it? I mean, well, okay. So when I remove it, I just you just pile up the little copper plates, and where do I take it?
Well, you'll have to look to a recycling center that'll take it. Check around to see what the going rate is, and if the rates are climbing. Wait until you think they're peaking and take it in. And I had a plumber that saved every copper pipe that he took out of a remodeling job, and he ended up with about, I don't know, 10 grand, I think, when he took it all in.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
So
yeah,
it can happen.
All right. So it's okay. Well, that's nice. So I can defray the cost of the replacement with that.
A little anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Good. All right. All right, but there's no way to save it, basically, really the best way.
No, you may be able to save it, but you're going to have to go to a roofing company that has done copper roofs. And the one in Milwaukee who did a copper roof for me most recently completely escapes me.
Oh, I remember.
This kind of thing is hit or miss, too. You could fix it, and you might fix what you think might be fine, and it could be a leak someplace else that's just finding its way in.
Believe me, yeah, I know. I've been dealing with it for a while. And
yeah, I think that you're going to find replacement after this many years, Christine, is going to make the most sense.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, well, thanks.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Dan in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm trying to... my patio is enclosed.
Okay.
I have concrete floor. What I want to do is I want to put wood floor down on top of it.
Okay.
But I want to know, is there something that I can get, you know, where keep the floor warm during the winter?
Yes, there are various ways of doing that. The easiest thing is to... the first thing you're going to want to do is you're going to want to put down a 6 mil polyethylene vapor barrier over the concrete, because concrete is really heavy sponge. So moisture is going to come up, and we want to keep that moisture from coming up into your new wood floor. And then over the top of that barrier, and you want to wrap that barrier up along the edges of the wall, you can then put rigid insulation over the concrete. So that'll give you a thermal break. Then on top of that, you put down your sleepers and then your wood floor.
Sleepers are basically just 2x4s laid flat that you'll put your your flooring on.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't ruin the wood floor during the winter then?
Well, the idea is, first, you're not going to have the moisture coming through the concrete to make them cup and warp. because you've got the polyethylene down there. Then you've got the airspace underneath. So if the wood can dry and equalize temperature and its humidity level to both sides. So unless you've got a lot of snow and water or something coming in there, it really should be fine. Now, you're going to want to use a pretty stable wood.
Okay. All right. Do appreciate it.
Thank you for calling. Christina in Glenwood City, hello to you.
Hi there. Thank you. I've got two questions regarding insulation. On Thursday, April 15th, a friend and I will be blowing 290 bags of fiberglass insulation in the attic of a big horse barn with an indoor riding arena.
Okay.
And I'm wondering, what advice can you give us about the best way to manage the project? As far as what to wear, how to reduce waste and mess, clean up, all of that.
Well, John's got a horse barn of his own.
Oh,
oh boy.
He's the one to talk to.
Yeah, and what we have to do is we got to back up a step. We got to figure moisture management. You get a tremendous amount of condensation in the ceilings of riding arenas and horse barns. And if that moisture goes up into this fiberglass insulation, that fiberglass insulation becomes wet. You're going to end up with a soggy mess up there that's going to transmit a lot of heat out. So you're going to have a vapor diffusion retarder up there. So you're going to, what sort of ceiling is in this horse barn now, Christina?
It's a metal ceiling.
Okay, a metal ceiling. Good. That's helpful. And that's probably screwed into place, but it has a lot of joints, doesn't it?
Yes. It also has a continuous soffit along.
And then this is a truss, and these are screwed to trusses, aren't they?
Yes.
Okay. I think what I'd probably start with is I would try to either find a way of sealing the joints to make it basically airtight, and then after that, as far as safety equipment and things, I think what you're going to need to do is go to the website of the manufacturer and look at their installation instructions, and they will have to have a safety equipment. They're going to tell you what sort of respirator to wear. I know when Ken and I do things like somebody asks us to come look at a crawl space, we buy these throwaway Tyvek suits.
Yeah, they work great with hoods.
Yep, they have hoods over the top, but you need to have a good respirator. You probably are going to want to protect your eyes. But just do check with the manufacturer if it's Owens Corning or whoever, and if it's not real available, call their tech support, and they will. You know, they want to keep you safe, so they will suggest what to use. But remember that when you've got horses, when they're breathing, it's a lot of pints per water per hour per horse, and that all is going to end up condensing up in that ceiling, unless you have the vapor retarder.
Oh, okay. I don't have any type of vapor barrier.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Venmar ventilation system that I use in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the metal itself helps a great deal, but what you have to worry about is the screw holes and where the metal is lapped. And I can't see the metal. I don't know how many laps, how big the sheets are. So the metal may help a great deal. But you just want to make sure that humidity doesn't end up rising up into there and then making your insulation less effective. The other thing to just double check, I'm assuming this is a fairly new facility?
Right. Yes, it is.
Okay. And the trusses were engineered for the additional load of the insulation. I know it isn't much, but...
Well, yes, all of that was taken into consideration.
Okay, that's great. And were those plans done by a professional, by an architect or somebody?
Well, I designed the facility, and there were so many facets to this project, but the person that built it did one aspect, and that would have been the insulation part as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's geothermal in the facility, so... Some of that information went to a place that specialized in that area, so there were just many hands involved.
Okay. Well, I just take that one caution. Make sure you control vapor, vapor migration before you insulate, and then check with the manufacturer on the best way to install the product.
All right, and good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Deanna emailed us and said 3 years ago we had a contractor install drain tile and two sump pumps in our Wauwatosa basement. The northeast pump runs seems to run constantly, even several times a day in 5-degree weather in winter. I noticed yesterday I hadn't heard one of them running. After testing the float outlet and circuit breaker, I determined the motor failed. The pumps are going on 3 years with one-year warranties. Should I expect a few more years from a sump pump, or is this a reasonable for a busy sump pump? Luckily, the pump on the northeast side is compensated, although this morning the carpeting was slightly damp near the failed pump.
There's a line of pumps, I think it's called U.S. Plumber, and I think they're actually made in the United States, and they have two-year warranties. And those, from what I know, seem to be the best. Ken, do you have anything?
No, but I would definitely have a backup pump put into the one that's used all the time. It's a possibility that Deanna's got an underground stream or something
right.
like that underneath the floor that's continuously needing to pump out. But I know, and I have to point to Larry now too, because Larry lives by the water, and he has some pumps that continuously operate through the summer.
Yeah, they'll run a lot, but I've never replaced the motor.
Having
knock on wood or something.
But they always go out at the worst time.
Yeah.
And so having a backup system is not a bad idea. And they make pumps that you can get that aren't very expensive that you can use in the same sump pit. And it'll kick in when the other one burns out. So I don't know if it's running all the time. 3 years is
a long time.
That's a long time mm-hmm. to pump water. So good luck to you.
Good luck. Thank you very much for that email. And on to Brian in Portage. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I have an attached porch to my house, and it's got a pretty flat roof. It's got a rubber membrane on it, and over the last rain the last couple of days, pretty heavy rains, I had pretty significant leaking coming in. I kind of looked at it, and I didn't notice any leaks in the seams. There is a couple seams up there, and I don't know if it's about 6x12, and I don't know if it's just easier to try to rip the whole thing off and put a new roof on, or to try to determine where the leak is coming in from the old roof.
So it's a rubber roof that's at the bottom of a shingled roof? Is
yes.
that correct? Well, a lot of times the leak occurs up higher, and so I would start looking up much higher than the rubber roof. See if you can find any damage up there, any places that the shingles are either damaged or separated or a nail hole that popped through. It's been my experience that you can have a leak. The leak will come in many, many feet away from where it actually causes damage. That'd be the first thing that I would look for. If it's a rubber roof and it's not that old, they should last a long, long time. I would think you should get 25 years out of a rubber roof.
I would think at least 20, unless people are walking on it for some reason.
Yeah, if you're walking, you get a lot
of
friction.
And, Brian, check any roof penetrations in the shingled roof above it, like where a plumbing stack may come through.
Mm-hmm, good.
We find about half of those are installed incorrectly, and they will drain water back into the roof, and that could follow under the shingles over the felt and make it seem like your rubber roof is leaking when actually it's a bad plumbing flashing.
And
so it could be higher up on the roof then.
Exactly.
Right. Or at the transition where you have the rubber underneath the shingles. I've seen roofers not do an adequate job of flashing the top of the rubber underneath the shingles too. So that'd be another place to look. How old is the roof?
It's probably about 10 years old.
It shouldn't be leaking. So I would look all around there and then go from there. Good luck.
So just kind of a search around.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. I was talking about woodpeckers earlier. Bill emails to say that they've been successful in keeping woodpeckers at bay by hanging wind socks around the roof.
That will help.
Yeah.
One other just real quick note for Brian. Brian, if you can't find anything, put a hose up on your flat roof, and if it doesn't leak after you've had a hose up there for an hour, then it's got to be in the transition or further
good,
up.
Good,
so
good
that's
idea.
That's one way of, I mean, if you hired me, that's what I would probably do. I would bring my hose.
Well, just okay. So long you don't bring your socks for the other, with the woodpecker
wind
damage.
Socks, yes.
Sandy in Marshfield, hello.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my call.
You had an earlier caller with some stains on cedar, and unfortunately, I don't know if mine is the same situation or not. I heard some of your answers, but I wasn't familiar with his situation. But my situation is I have a vaulted ceiling with rough cedar, and it's water-stained. And I was wondering if there was any way of getting the stains out without replacing the rough cedar wood.
The problem with the rough cedar, Sandy, is how do you apply anything?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the smooth cedar, you can wipe things. You know, you can use a terry cloth towel and try things. But with rough cedar, I really don't know any way of doing it. If you're lucky, maybe it's a channel lap instead of a tongue and groove, so you can replace pieces that need to be replaced.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm afraid there. I mean, about the only thing you can try to do there would be to see if you could change the color of the rest of it so the stains wouldn't be so obvious with a stain or an oil or something or other. But it's when you can't rub it with anything, it's really difficult to apply something that might dissolve the stains.
Yeah, I've tried a couple of things, and it is really difficult, as you say, because it's rough cedar. I was wondering, would any bleach type of on these darker spots, I suppose it wouldn't hurt to try.
But I don't think you're going to have a lot of success. I think what you'll find is you'll end up with three different colors instead of two.
Yeah, it might make it worse.
So replacement's probably the way to go.
Well, one thing you might try as an interim is take a very soft bristled brass brush,
mm-hmm.
and just very gently rub with the grain,
mm-hmm.
and see if it doesn't polish it. The trouble is if you polish it up, it'll be an eyesore. But if you try, mm-hmm. progressively, start very gently and go progressively more rigorously until you see either the stain lessening or you see that you're damaging the wood more than you want. That pops into my head. So
okay.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Gina emailed, "We recently renovated our upstairs bathroom, replaced all the pipes where the shower in the wall meets. My problem is that the ceiling right under the bathtub and toilet is leaking, and I can't see where it's coming from. The pipes are dry that we replaced. Is there a way to detect where it's leaking without tearing the place apart?"
The number one place that leaks underneath the bathroom is at the toilet seal. Quite often it doesn't seal properly, and most people recommend that you replace the seal every 3 years. Now, I don't know anybody that does, but
no.
You pull a toilet and replace the wax ring. That would be the first place. The second place that I would look would be at the edge of the tile where the tile and bathtub meet. If you're getting splashed down the edge of the tub, sometimes that's not adequately caulked, and that could be another leak point.
All right. There you have it. Guys, you have websites?
Yes.
Yeah, give us your Ken, what's your website?
My website is adamsdesignconstruction.com.
adamsdesignconstruction.com.
With three W's before it, like everybody else.
adamsdesignconstruction.com. And John?
I still don't, Larry. I keep promising that one of these days we'll get a website up there with a lot of the frequently asked questions, but...
You're so old
school. I've been
too
busy. I've been too busy working to work on that.
But eventually.
Eventually, yes.
We will have it. John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg and Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, our guests. And, of course, we will have them back and we'll do this again. Sorry we didn't get to all the calls and emails, but, it's the way it works. Tomorrow we've got Garden Talk. Barb Larson, a Kenosha County Extension horticulture educator, our guest. Thank you for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.